Hello and welcome to the Future History of Newburgh, a series of short stories about a peculiar town on a peculiar planet where science and magic mingle in an effort to save the worlds. How have you been? My dog is panting. I really hope you can't hear it. I've been good. It's not as hot as it has been. Not that I'm in a hurry for winter, because I'm kind of a lizard. But, you know, I wrote this season of the Future History of Newburgh during wintertime and for wintertime because I thought it would be released around the end of February or March. But that is not what happened. I kind of overestimated myself. Anyway, I hope if it's warm wherever you are right now that this is helping you cool off a little bit. And if it's not, then yay, you can identify with how the people are feeling a little chilly. Anyhow, in the last episode, we paid our respects to Darren Gorski as he promised to finish one last project. In this episode, we're going to meet someone he left behind. Please enjoy Season 3, Episode 2, Rings and Schemes. Dr. Annie Gorski sat in bed with the news open on her comm ring. She had retreated to her bedroom, away from the bouquets of flowers and sympathy cards sent from well-meaning friends, colleagues, and family. They were constant reminders of the waking nightmare she found herself living. She had brushed her teeth and donned her PJs, and she had been okay. Normally, she would have turned on the comm screen to watch a show, but there was nothing there that interested her now. It was all meaningless, mindless chatter of the world going on, as if nothing monumental had happened. She had climbed into her side of the bed, not daring to look at the empty place beside her. The silence had been deafening. Even without the flowers and cards, the absence of her husband was everywhere. An ache clawed at her heart, and as a minor distraction from the pain, she had opened her comm ring to read the news like she normally did while they watched TV in bed. It was habit for her, but even this was no escape. Darren's obituary gleamed back at her in electric blue text. Darren Gorski was a valued inspector at Ridgeway Inspections. He enjoyed a wide range of hobbies, including racquetball, rock collecting, and flying kites. He is survived by his wife, Annie, and their two children, Joseph and Esme. Such a quick gloss over of a life and death. Annie couldn't help but think of everything the obituary didn't say. Things like that autopsy scans revealed that Darren was murdered. Darren Gorski was a loving husband killed by ingesting a substance developed to put space travelers in hibernation. Too much of this substance was lethal and mirrored the symptoms of a heart attack. Mr. Gorski was a caring father who ate enough donuts to cause a real heart attack, but had a fake one instead. Annie had never felt so alone in the house as she did that night. She even wished Smudge, Darren's cat, was still alive. Smudge had hated her, but she would have welcomed the presence of another body in the house. "Sweetheart," Darren said, sitting on the bed next to her. Annie turned calmly to her right. He was still wearing the clothes she saw him in when she identified his body. His voice was so normal, like it was any other evening, and he was just getting her attention to ask where his socks were. She huffed a laugh at the vivid vision her mind was creating. The human mind was fascinating, especially in the face of the unthinkable. It was the reason she still found so much fulfillment in her career as a psychologist after all these years. Such a drastic and unexpected change in her life was bound to bring up some kind of manifestation from the recesses of her grieving brain. "Sweetheart," Darren continued, "do you remember when I was trying to bring in a bit of extra cash so we could buy a boat? Remember I went and applied to be a lab rat for early data gene editing experiments?" Annie remembered the boat that Darren bought and took out on the water once. She laughed through her nose at his boyish enthusiasm for it, and again at her brain's mirage of her husband. She recognized she was teetering on the edge of a mental breakdown. The figment of her husband reacted to her laughter. Well, you definitely didn't think experimenting was funny at the time. I'm glad you're laughing now. But you see, he shrank a bit, as if preparing for some sort of blow. I think I accidentally downloaded some information that I wasn't supposed to see. She didn't respond. She merely stared at him. Talking to her mind's manifestation would only encourage those synapses to keep firing. I'm glad you can see me. I was afraid I wouldn't be able to get my message to you from wherever I am now. Annie loved Newburgh because it was a place of freedom to explore ideas and new frontiers. That meant weeding out bizarre and outdated ways of thinking, such as believing her husband was anywhere other than in a morgue right now. He was dead. And yet, if her husband was dead, how did she still love him? She didn't love a memory, and she didn't love someone who didn't exist anymore. There was nothing left to love. She felt her brow furrow ever so slightly. Annie, you have to get to my body in the morgue so you can get the file I downloaded. I wasn't wearing my comm ring, so it hasn't been transferred to it. But the bacteria that carry the information will start to die soon as my body, you know, he said, as if he didn't want to mention the nasty business of decomposition. Annie understood why she would be hallucinating at this point in the grieving process. But why would her brain choose to focus on her husband's edited genes? Frustrated with her brain's insistence on torturing her, she snapped at the vision. This is insane! I'm not going to the morgue. I'm not rifling through my dead husband's pockets. I'm not talking to you. Annie threw the covers back and stomped to the bathroom sink to splash water on her face. Warm tears mixed with the cool liquid, and she buried her face in her hands, choking back sobs. Sweetheart, she saw Darren in the mirror now behind her, his face pale, almost see-through. Her face was nearly as pale, with dark circles under her almond-shaped eyes. Her dark hair drooped to her shoulders, dulled with neglect. Darren reached out a hand to soothe her back, but she didn't feel anything. Of course she didn't. He wasn't there. Annie, it's dangerous information. There are some bad people in Newburgh planning something awful. Dangerous? Her heart beat faster, and she had a moment of weakness, debating whether or not she should actually listen to the figment. I am not having this conversation. But the hallucination persisted. I'm not sure exactly what they're planning, but they killed me because of it. I'm not sure who you can trust. They didn't think to look on my comm ring, so they'll probably come here searching for any files I might have sent to the home computer. You need to go now. I think your life might depend on it. And it's not your time yet. She whirled to him, her frustration growing by the second. If you're really my husband, prove it. Prove to me you're not just some concoction of my mind trying to make up for the fact that the man I love is gone forever. Annie set her jaw and crossed her arms. Okay, I'll prove it. Those cookies you don't like me to have in the house, I hid them inside a jar of mung beans in the pantry. Annie felt a flare of anger that he was sneaking food, but then remembered she was really only mad at her brain. Still, she went to the pantry and checked, and there she found 6 chocolate cookies submerged in the pebble-like beans. Her mind raced. This could be something I knew subconsciously, she said, holding a cookie. I knew how the temptation was too much for you to keep away from those cookies and that you'd be hiding them. She looked the visage of her husband in the eye, then quickly looked away, so she didn't convince herself that she was talking to anyone but herself. These mung beans are ancient. We never eat them. I was on a health kick when I bought them. To stuff down the feeling spiraling out of control, she took a bite of the sweet sandwich cookie. This time, she purposefully looked her husband's mirage in the eye, daring him to stop her eating his cookies. She bit down hard on a mung bean that still clung to the cookie's icing. It didn't hurt, but she winced, thinking of how it might have. Darren floated closer and put his hands on her shoulders. Are you okay? He asked, eyes full of concern. She found herself feigning pain to keep him close. She wanted him to comfort her. Her husband was dead, She wanted nothing more but to crawl in his arms and cry about it. But she couldn't do that because he wasn't really there. "I don't want you to hurt anymore, honey. Please, please go to the morgue. Download the file to my ring and take it somewhere safe." Annie closed her eyes against her false husband. "If I do this, will you go away?" she asked. It was too late to ignore the phantom. She had already played into her mind's tricks. Maybe, if she just played into them more, she could work through whatever her mind was trying to process. "I don't know," he answered. "Perhaps. I'm not sure how all this works." Annie stuffed the rest of the cookie in her mouth and reburied the other 5 in the mung beans. She didn't know why she did that, but she didn't have the mental energy to analyze any more of her actions right now. She put on some black yoga pants and a black long-sleeved tee. If she was going to sneak into the morgue after dark, she should blend in with the shadows. She put her hair up in a quick ponytail and threw on a black overcoat. Catching a glimpse of herself in the mirror on her way out the door, she thought she looked like a criminal in her all-black clothes. She also looked like a widow. She shrugged at herself in the mirror and gave herself a weak half-smile as if to tell the widow bandit, "I don't know how our life ended up here, but I guess we're living it." There were no cabs running this late at night, so she took her bike the 5 miles to the Midtown morgue. The cold, wintry air rushed against her face, seeming to scrape her cheeks. In her periphery, she could see her husband's form gliding next to her with a little smile on his face. Actually, he seemed to be mostly face at this point. The rest of his form trailed behind him like an amorphous flag of dim light. She parked her bike in the alley between the morgue and the hospital. Emergency services was on the other side of the block, but here the windows were dark. The streets were empty. In her focused effort to get rid of her hallucination, she hadn't given any thought to how she would get into the morgue. Its door, like every other lock in Newburgh, would require some sort of personalized security key. She had no clearance to open the doors and no knowledge of how to fake security clearance. Weary and out of her depth, she put her forehead against the glass door, her breath fogging up the cold pane. She peered inside the darkened building as if something within could help her open the door. She saw a shiny linoleum floor reflecting faint moonlight and a long front welcome desk with the top of a rolling chair peeking up from behind it. She also saw Darren's transparent form floating inches above the floor. She giggled hysterically at the sight. Though she wasn't surprised to see him anymore, she just couldn't believe she was in this state of mind. She briefly mused about making an appointment at her own office in the morning. She wondered what Brenda would say when she called in as a patient this time. Her husband's form located the security panel just inside the door and appeared to plunge his hand inside of it. A blue bolt of electricity snaked around the panel, and she heard the door lock click. Testing her hallucination, she tugged at the door and found it had indeed unlocked. What were the odds? Once inside, she heard the security alarm sounding. If she was going to go through with this odd mental recovery plan, she had better do it quickly. She didn't know what would happen if she was caught here. Would she be arrested? Maybe her professional license would be revoked. Certainly, people would hear about it through the rumor mill, if not the papers. She could lose all her clients. She could lose her credibility. But did any of that really matter now? She didn't have much room in her brain for her clients or her reputation. Those concerns were all a reflex with no substance. So she moved at a smooth pace through the darkened building, but she didn't rush. Annie went to the room with the big window through which she had viewed her husband's body a few days before. The body would only be here a few more days before the funeral director came to collect it. She opened the door and walked to the wall of large drawers, scanning the names scrolling by on small digital screens above the handles. She found Gorski, Darren, and pulled. Dim light filtered through windows high in the wall and illuminated his face, causing Annie to pause. It was still shocking to see his body in this cold, dark place. Slowly, she withdrew the rest of the drawer. A white sheet covered his torso and was tucked under his arms. He smelled strange now, not like death so much. She could still catch a whiff of his deodorant, but he didn't smell like him anymore. His hands were laid out flat instead of the gentle curve they typically relaxed into when he slept. The lines on his cheeks, born from years of smiling, had no mirth in them anymore. They were more like tally marks, noting years of wear. She looked to the hallucination that hovered next to her, and she saw more life, more of her husband's essence in this figment than in the husk of a body in the drawer.
"Wow, my double chin looks really bad from this angle," the hallucination said.
She sighed. Darren always made jokes at the wrong moment. She had started to not laugh at them in the past few years. She regretted that now. She would miss his ill-timed humor. After all, it was just his attempt at lightening a tense situation. Annie frowned. "The ring was in your pocket, but they took your clothes off."
"There, at my feet,"
the hallucination said, pointing with his vaporous finger. Following his gesture, Annie saw a pile of clothes folded and placed carefully at his feet. She was pleased to see that the pathologist treated his subjects with care. She removed his sweater from the top of the pile and couldn't resist burying her face in it just for a moment. It had been in this drawer too long. It didn't smell like him anymore, either. She draped it across his legs and picked up his slacks, wondering in the back of her mind if there were any of his dirty clothes left in the hamper she could sniff later. She was mildly disgusted at herself. But had a patient of hers admitted this thought to her, she would have been compassionate. She tried to show that same compassion to herself, but it lacked sincerity. As his slacks unfolded in her hands, two rings fell out of his front pocket, one silver, one gold. They bounced and pinged on the hard linoleum floor. In a panic, she dove toward the gold one, scrambling after it under tables and around a swivel chair as it rolled away from her grasp. Finally, she caught it in both hands and stared down at it like an obsessed hobbit. The hallucination said, "Nice catch. My comm ring landed over here." Remembering her true objective, she got to her feet and moved to retrieve the round piece of tech from the other side of the room. She placed her husband's wedding ring on her thumb for safekeeping and peered at the silver comm ring, knowing it would do nothing if she put it on. She hadn't experimented with her own DNA in a moment of boat-crazed weakness. "I think there's a good chance the carrier bacteria will still be viable to relay the files," the hallucination said. Annie shook her head. If this was some elaborate scheme her brain had concocted to get close to her husband's body, then she really was sick. She could probably use some hypnotherapy, but it was hard to hypnotize oneself. She had heard of sages being able to manipulate the mind in certain ways, but she would rather chew off her own arm than use magic, or whatever those people thought they did. She'd rather be in here, indulging a wild fantasy for sure. "Let's just get this over with," she mumbled. She braced herself for the disappointment of knowing she was certifiably insane if no files popped up. She pushed the ring onto Darren's unnaturally stiff and cold pinky finger. The ring beeped softly, indicating its battery life was almost out. Of course it was. The rings were charged by the body's kinetic movements. Darren's body hadn't moved in a few days now. But a screen still popped up with a question splayed across it. "Do you wish to download file crusher.exj? So there was a file, and Annie wasn't insane. But she was still hallucinating, and now there was a growing sense of foreboding surrounding this file. With a deep breath, she pressed OK. In a flash, the download's progress bar was complete. She could only guess at what the file contained. She gazed into her hallucination's softly glowing eyes, returning his smile with a quavering one of her own.
"Hello? Anyone working now?"
asked a befuddled yet firm voice in the hallway outside. The morgue's alarm had summoned a security officer. She hissed, ducking under the cover of her husband's body in the drawer. The consequences of being caught felt much more pressing now, and a wash of adrenaline flooded her system. "I'll distract her," the hallucination said, and then drifted off into the hallway. She tugged the comm ring off his finger and slipped it over her other thumb. As quietly as she could, she closed her husband's body back up into the drawer, giving it another glance that would have been wistful
had she felt she was really leaving something behind. He definitely wasn't under that skin anymore. She sank low when she saw the security guard through the room's window. The guard appeared uneasy about being in a darkened morgue by herself. Then Annie heard a noise at the other end of the hallway, a buzzing sound, followed by a crash. The security officer ran toward the noise, giving Annie time to slip out the door and run out of the entrance. Heart racing, she clambered onto her bike and sped down the alleyway, glancing behind her to see if she was followed. She wasn't. When she turned back around, she saw Darren's form gliding along near the handlebars. She made a noise of surprise at his sudden appearance. "They turned the coffee pot on, and it shattered the empty pot," he said with a tinge of smugness. Then worry covered his hazy features. "Where are you headed?" "You can't go home. The man who killed me is there. I just came from there and saw him." Annie turned another corner and slowed in front of a row of apartment buildings. She put her feet to the ground and looked up. Only a few lights glowed in the windows above. "This is too much," she said out of breath. "Now I can't go home." Darren tilted his head. "Do you still not believe me?" "I don't know what I believe," she said, gazing at the rings on each of her thumbs at the handlebars. "If you love me, please, please don't go home. It's not safe," he pleaded. Of course she loved him, didn't she? She got the comm ring, but her hallucination of her husband hadn't left like she had hoped. How long would she be talking to a delusion? Donning her psychologist's hat again, she considered the fact that her mind might have been telling her to not go home and be alone. It might have been asking her to find some company. Company would be a healthy choice at this time. "I'll go to Zan's," she sighed. She felt defeated, yet hopeful that some companionship would get her mind back on track. Darren smiled as she put her feet to the pedals again. "That's perfect. There's hardly anything more terrifying than a Zan in a passionate rage. You'll be safe there," he said. Annie nodded while she pedaled. Drawn up to their full height and with whip-like tentacles, Zans could be formidable foes. Zan's house was on the other side of Newburgh, but it only took her about 30 minutes to cycle there. Houses in the Zan community resembled a colony of mushrooms with sloping earthen walls, graceful arched walkways, and living grass roofs. Annie leaned her bike against a home with a red arched door and tried to smooth out her appearance. Her hair was windblown, and she was sweaty despite the chilly air. Zan opened the door in a graceful flourish of aquamarine tentacles. "Oh, Annie, I'm so glad you've come. I didn't know whether you would want company right now or to be left alone." Zan looked tired, as would be expected at the late hour, but still pulled Annie into the house and into an embrace. Annie didn't even mind that her coat was now covered in slime. It felt good to be held. She pulled away and swiped some lingering slime from her face as politely as she could. "Thanks, Zan. We thought I needed to be with a friend right now." Annie was pushed along into the kitchen where Zan prepared some kind of muddy herbal tea for them both, with little bits of moss in it. It looked gross, but she knew from experience it was delicious and calming. The kitchen was bright and sparse, yet still cozy. She sat on a bar stool at the counter, and Darren sat next to her. Annie tried her best to ignore him, and watched almost mesmerized as Zan flowed about the kitchen pouring water, preparing mugs, and finding spoons all with different tentacles. Zan used to be her children's dance teacher, but it had been the adults who had struck up a friendship that had lasted well after her kids had grown and developed other interests. She remembered how awkward even her darling children looked when they danced, compared to their teacher's fluid moves as Zan instructed them. "Have you been able to sleep, dear?" Zan asked over a shoulder. "Sometimes," she answered. "Mostly during the day. Nights are harder." She felt bad complaining about her sleeping problems when she knew Zan hadn't been sleeping well either. But Zan's situation was much different. The choice of when to reproduce was individual and highly controversial in the Zan community. They reproduced asexually, making splits of their own personalities, who each grew and developed multifaceted personalities of their own. Some believed a Zan should wait to reproduce until they were old and had learned more about the world so that their young would have more experience. Others maintained that the physical body degraded and was apt to make poor copies of the self past a certain age. This meant that some Zans were reproducing right after high school. Zan was much older now, and the choice of whether to reproduce or to go gracefully into old age was heavy. Annie selfishly hoped Zan didn't reproduce anytime soon. She would miss her friend, and she didn't want one more loved one disappearing from her life. However, if that was the path chosen, she would help the community raise all the little mini-Zans that were born. It was a fascinating concept to Annie, seeing the personality split and develop in different ways under different environments and circumstances. Part of her wanted to ignore her own problems and dissect Zan's mind, but she didn't feel confident to analyze anyone at the moment. Her eyes flicked to where Darren was seated, bopping his head along to whatever tune Zan was humming. She saw the comm ring Zan wore on one tentacle and was reminded of the silver ring on her thumb. Annie twisted it, and it came to life. The battery had charged some on her ride over here, and a screen popped up in front of her. New user detected. Start data transfer, yes or no?
No!
She shouted, causing Zan to nearly spill the tea, but being so agile, Zan caught all the flying droplets in the appropriate mugs. What is it, dear? Zan asked, pushing a steaming mug across the counter toward her.
It seems silly,
Annie started. Go on, Zan encouraged, bringing a mug up to aquamarine lips and blowing ripples across the tea's surface to cool it. This is Darren's comm ring. I think there's a file on it I'm supposed to see, but it thinks I'm a new user and wants to transfer the data from my old comm ring to his. But that will overwrite the file I want to see, she explained. Zan unfurled a tentacle. Annie pulled the ring off her thumb and placed it in one of the tentacle's suckers. Opening a drawer, Zan pulled out a rack of sorts with 10 comm rings lined up in a row, all in different colors and materials. I like to change comm rings depending on the season, or depending on the hour. Zan gave a little laugh and shrugged a few tentacles. The ring stand lets me transfer data from one ring to the next without wiping the data. Darren's silver ring glided smoothly over one of the stand's prongs, and Zan gestured for Annie's comm ring. I'll transfer the data onto your ring instead. Fantastic! We'll finally get to the bottom of this, Darren said to her left. Annie gave a panicked glance to Zan and back to Darren, but Annie was still the only one to hear him. Data transfer complete, Zan said, reading the projected screen above the rings aloud. Annie received both rings back and wiped the tentacle slime off of them, out of sight under the counter. She placed her ring on and twisted. She found Crusher.exj and opened it. Do you want some privacy, my dear? Zan asked. No, it's not personal, and I'd rather not be alone. Zan smiled and slurped at the tea. Up popped 3 blue screens of strange drawings and scribbles. It took a moment for Annie to recognize one as schematics for some sort of machine. The other 2 were lists of chemical compounds. What is this? Zan asked, straightening and gliding around to see the screens from Annie's point of view. This looks ominous. It was true. The machine looked sinister, like it was made to destroy. He was right, Annie remarked in a whisper. I knew it, Darren said, displeased. I inspected a candy factory. They shouldn't have schematics for a weapon. A wave of confusion, frustration, anger, and deep grief flooded Annie. Her husband's death, this creepy machine, the chemical formulas listed with it, Darren's body at the morgue, nearly being caught breaking in, and the uncertainty of her own delusional mind overwhelmed her. She covered her ears and cried out, I wish you would just go away! You're making me feel crazy! After a few moments, she removed her hands from her ears. Her breath and heartbeat slowed, and she realized she had just shouted in her friend's home for no apparent reason. She looked up to see Zan's face, shocked at her sudden outburst. She instantly wished she could take back her words. Not only had she scared her friend, but now she didn't see Darren anywhere. Her head told her this was a good thing, but her heart said otherwise. Chief Pearson stood in the doorway between the office and the factory floor with clenched fists. Both rooms were empty except for a dying potted plant and some candy strewn on the floor. There was no computer to look through for records, no bomb paraphernalia, no workers to question, no Catherine Murphy to detain. He had had his chance to bring her in a few days ago when they had discovered the missing cursed children used for cheap labor here. He had seen them making candy, but Dr. Annie Gorski had found evidence on her husband's comm ring that this building had been used to create a bomb. He had some people in Lower Newburgh looking over the chemical list from the comm ring to ascertain what they might be used for. In the meantime, it was Pearson's job to bring the people behind the list into custody, but he had let them slip through his fingers with no trace to follow. "We're all finished downstairs, sir," Sergeant Marcus said from behind him. "We'll send what we have down to the labs to start processing." Pearson gritted his teeth as he watched the rest of his officers scour the factory, collecting any scrap of evidence they could find. He knew it wouldn't do them any good. What they needed was gone. Swallowing his self-resentment, he managed to thank Sergeant Marcus for the update. Marcus could go back to the lab. Other officers could slog through the paperwork. Catherine Murphy and her assistant Al were still out there with a large-scale weapon. He would find them and bring them in himself. That concludes episode 2, Rings and Schemes. If you liked the show, please leave a rating or a review at your favorite podcast provider. If you want to show some more love, donations are accepted at the link in the show notes. And of course, you know that I also welcome support through other avenues like buying my books or buying some Newburgh swag at the links below. A cut of everything also goes to St. Jude's. If you are not from the U.S., you may not be familiar with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. They are a hospital that treats children with life-threatening illnesses, and their families never receive a bill. All of their treatments are free. The family's lodging is also free. It's a really great facility, something that I'm really proud to support. So please know that a part of what you donate to me gets passed along to these kids too. Wherever you're listening, hit that subscribe button so you'll automatically get the newest episode of The Future History of Newburgh, and you'll avoid any fear of missing out. The Future History of Newburgh was written, narrated, and produced by R. Don Hutchinson. To find out more, please visit rdonhutchinson.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and helping the story unfold. Seeing the personality spit.
That's what it says. I'm just reading what it says, Becky. Spit personality.